wage increases and weekly earnings increases. Really, most of the change in revenues is caused by a lower employment adjustment.
The Oregon lumber employment picture, you've only slightly reduced those figures.
Yeah, because it was at a fairly, probably irreducible minimum already. I would say that generally speaking, if you want a frame of reference, that probably these estimates tend to be on the low side of what the consensus is. But on the other hand, I would say the consensus has been steadily moving downward.
Are any of these indicators adjusted substantially? You've got housing starts down from 1.35 to 1.25 in the first year, from 1.50 to 1.35 in the second year.
Actually, I think the industrial production estimate is up somewhat, reflecting a little stronger national economy than one that previously anticipated. You know, it's really rather a strange two-way street here. You've got the national economy doing better, and you've got a local economy doing less well.
I remember quite vividly the last time you were here in March that you said that housing starts, and we kind of debated whether you were too high, and you said that was really really low. That's just about as low as you could go.
Well, it still is very low, as I say. It's certainly on the
it's lower than
it was then on the low side of the of consensus, and it still is.
Now, how does this reduction fold into your base that we're going to be operating from now on? The 17, for example, on the first page of first schedule,
yes.
Personal income taxes down $17 million.
Well, that's not in the base of it, because that's 81 money. From what I see at this point, got a number of the returns already in. The base or the 1980 yield, whatever you want to call it, looks about right from the estimates we've been using. The April 15 returns didn't really produce any surprises other than in the estimated payments.
So most of that $17 million is from the lack of estimated payments?
It's all.
Okay. And then if we go over to personal income taxes on Schedule 2, the minus $69 million.
Yes.
Again, I guess I just get that $17 million confused.
Well,
where does that fit in?
It doesn't fit into the 69. It's
okay.
A separate item.
Okay.
Now, 69 includes a few other things. Bear in mind, as this is with the governor's proposed package, and for instance, there's one item in there where the amount to be picked up by repealing the weatherization credit is now apparently $5 million less than previously. So that's a separate item that's in there.
I would agree with that.
Schedule away on that.
But not by 3 p.m. You can't do it by 3 p.m. Any other significance to the data that you'd like to point out to the committee?
Well, I don't think so. As I pointed out earlier today, the actual straight economics part of it isn't, I don't think, as bad as the numbers indicate. You know, there's some non-economic elements in there, like, as I say, the weatherization package. Part of this is somewhat changed flows of personal income in adjusting for the shortfall in the estimated payments. But I think that would fairly well summarize what's there.
on the Schedule 2, your interest earnings figure, does that include the cash flow question being resolved?
Yes, yes, it does.
Now, I guess at the base of all of the assumptions is the future of the economy. Do you try to project the what's going to happen to interest rates proper in the by quarter?
Yes.
Okay. What's gonna what do you think will happen in the remainder of this year?
I think rates will go down.
Okay. So that by December will be where?
Well, I took another look at what was said this morning. I had the prime rate dropping to 15% by the end of the year. That's getting that being
originally you had because I was sure
it was
that I don't think it was you, but I was sure I heard people talking about 14 to 15% this spring. Now, I think spring's almost gone.
That's right.
Okay, we're 6 points above that.
That's right. I mean, that is the significant change that really has brought about our need to change revenue estimates.
Yeah.
Rates have shot up here.
Okay. Now, what's going to change that?
Well, I think to conservative, like I said, I think the market has made a mistake in its whole interpretation of the Fed policy. I think that this run-up wasn't warranted. And I think as if the money supply figures come back into line, I think there'll be less panic about.
Okay, how do the money supply figures come back into line?
Well,
you decrease the money supply.
Yeah, in this instance, that would be represented by a slowing of the increase or an actual decrease.
Okay.
More likely a slowing of the increase.
And a slowing of the increase of the money supply will turn the economy on.
Well, it's rather perverse. It will not stimulate the economy, but it will soothe the financial markets and tend to bring rates down.
Okay. Assuming that happens, you think it'll get down to 15%?
I think that's quite, yes.
Okay, at 15%, can the Oregon economy improve?
I don't think significantly.
Okay, then what's calling for the recovery a year from now? I'm just.
Well, I think most of the recovery will be in our spillover and our share of the continued recovery in the national economy, you know, which we get certainly some of that will show up here. I don't look for any big recovery in the lumber industry.
Of the, okay, and you told me earlier, however, that one of the major factors in the loss of revenue and the need to revise this, the lack of employment. And I would think that that's primarily in the lumber industry.
Well, that's correct. But I would say that the recovery from the drop in employment we've had now looks like it will come more slowly, and most of it will take place outside the lumber industry. Now, that was the original assumption anyway, but just the pace of that has been scaled back in this new set of assumptions.
That the recovery will take place outside of the lumber industry?
Primarily, yes.
Okay, and again, I guess in order to swallow that assumption, I have to know where. Because I talk to people who are in business. I talk to corporations who own sites in Oregon that someday they might develop. I'm not going to do it this biennium. So where? Is it going to be international trade? Is it going to be...
Well, I think it's going to be in our share of all those other parts of the economy, which have already shown some recovery, electrical instruments, metals manufacturing.
Okay, they're going to...
Our share of, you might say, of the national industries, as opposed to, let's say, to what we want to think of as the lumber industry being our local industry.
So Tektronix will be back at full employment?
Well, they may not be back full employment, but they'll be showing some pickup.
But isn't that just a very minute fraction of the total employment picture? Electronics, I've heard that.
Well, I'm just using it as an example of a national industry of which we have a share that is going to show some recovery.
But I see fewer automobiles being sold. I see people in Oregon not wanting to go into debt any further, in part because they're already over their heads. I see business choosing not to expand until economic indicators show that they can get a return on the money. And I have yet to find a reason to swallow the fact that there's any force, including Ronald Reagan, that has a plan that will pick up the economy in the sense that Oregon would benefit within the next two-year period substantially. I mean, a turnaround. I don't see that force there. In fact, I guess I just have a hard, not having been a student of a lot of economics, I have a hard time understanding how you can have interest rates this high, how you can afford, if people are in fact relying on borrowed money, how you can produce enough more when your markets are not there, when you can't really expand your product line, how you can continue to borrow at this rate with the same workforce getting paid higher salaries and stay in business. Apparently it's happening and apparently it's going to happen. I don't understand how it happens, because when I try that, I get notes from the credit card companies and the bank to tell me to quit using borrowed money and pay up. Now, I don't know how they're going to do it, because there's, I don't understand it, but maybe it will work out. But I think
what you say is very valid. I mean, I would say that 2 years ago, if you asked the economics profession whether industry could survive at all given current interest rates, everyone would have said no. They probably would have told you you'd be in a deep recession by now, given these interest rates. But nevertheless, one way or another, the adjustments do seem to have been made.
But aren't other states facing large revenue shortfalls due to the lack of employment? And are all those turning around now?
So, well, I think there are very few others that have that mix of industries which have been so specifically hit by high interest rates as we have been.
Michigan is understandable.
Yeah, I read in one publication that went beyond Michigan, Ohio, several others.
Generally, those that are in trouble are those in the Northeast industrial base states that have been in the decline economically. Deep South has growing economically, has been. You get into some of the energy-related things down there on their revenue side, and they have not been hurt as much. The far west, southwest, is growing like leaps and bounds. The entire spine of the Rocky Mountains is energy development country now. Their problems are controlling growth and planning on the governmental infrastructure to take care of the very large growths in population that have already occurred and will continue to occur. You know, the Rocky Mountain states are a little Alaska. They got more severance money they know what to do with now and in the future, but boy, do they have problems, because they can't build their roads and schools and et cetera fast enough. So you find a mix. The Northeast, of course, has been going through this problem quite a bit, but as you can see from the national indicators that Paul has had in his memo, generally the country as a whole has recovered from this very sharp recession of 1 year ago. Michigan still has not, because they're our prime automobile manufacturer. But this has always been a housing automobile recession in large extent. Still is.
Senator Monroe. How important is the wheat and wheat export to Oregon's economy? Isn't that a fairly significant part of Oregon's economy, and isn't that a on the bright side of the picture in terms of wheat exports?
We've mentioned electronics. I just heard that there's some down in Eugene, some companies, and I assume moderately small companies, that have shifted from lumbering manufacturing into other kinds of parts manufacturing on the national market. So, I mean, this is the kind of change you were getting at, and it isn't something you can measure, but the proportion of our economy that comes from wood products has been consistently decreasing, and will continue, for the future. It isn't one great huge upsurge. in one thing or another. Foreign exports, agriculture, and other exports, but primarily agriculture that we're talking about to the present, is a growing importance to us as a state. Yes, of course. It's just a matter of time until we get some kind of coal export, and it isn't going to be basically coal that we mine here. But again, that brings dollars.
And it's not going to be in this biennium.
No, but you may well see something happen during this biennium and getting ready for it that starts the construction.
That tends to cost money, not produce it.
Well, that depends on who does it. Going to have an economic impact, particularly on the Portland metropolitan area.
Depends on where it comes. One plan is, of course, in Coos Bay, where they would mix some Rocky Mountain coal with some of the, as I understand it, poor quality deposits in the Coos Bay area and use Coos Bay as a shipment point for export. Another plan is, of course, to come to Portland or Astoria, they're talking about bringing some Rocky Mountain through and then transship in one of the ports along the Columbia River anywhere, both Oregon and Washington. But those kinds of things are going to happen sometime and relatively rapidly. Coal exporting has become a major thing back in the Newport News or something like that. It's just amazing back here in the last couple, 3 years what's happened.
Is the reduction in Japanese auto imports going to have a negative impact on Oregon's economy? A lot of those Japanese cars come in through through the Port of Portland. Is that going to be significant? Or
I haven't heard any real analysis of that of you, Paul. I can't see that that's...
I've heard that that would help Portland, and I think it will.
How?
Well, because the Japanese are going to be allowed to only send so many to this country. They'll send them to the closest port where they'll sell them, because they're going to sell anyway, instead of shipping them to the East Coast or down into Louisiana.
Okay.
That's going to help the Port of Portland.
Okay. Well, I had heard some reports that they were afraid if they cut, since the port has invested heavily in facilities for the importation of Japanese cars, that if they significantly cut back on importation of Japanese cars, that this would have a negative or deteriorating impact.
It could be a positive, right?
Yeah.
Okay, are there other questions?
You stick around, Smith, and we'll get you educated for sure.
Yes,
sir. The, so you don't think 45, 50 days from now you're going to be coming in with an estimate that says that we just lost another $50 million?
Well, hopefully not. As
you've heard before, Mr. Chairman, the only thing that we can guarantee about these revenue forecasts that we've made before you every quarter is we know that they are
not
exactly right. The only question is in which direction and how far.
And I also, Mr. Chairman,
I wish we'd get the annual sessions real quick so we could do this full time.
Remind you what he said a while ago about the fact that 2 years ago if the economists had been asked about what's going on now, they would have been very inaccurate in their projections. So I think we have to take that into account too.
Well, Mr. Chairman, one thing you have to take into account that humans make changes. And monetary policies that have been affected by the federal government more to do with our difficulty than any single solitary thing that we're dealing with here. And if humans decide that they're going to stay on the current monetary tread, then his figures even today will be adjusted downward if you really want to look at it.
Yeah. Well, I
estimate that the interest rates will drop, and if they don't, we're in worse trouble.
Yeah, I think we're right. It depends, how you interpret what trend monetary policy is on. But if let's say it is a restrictive policy, we're better off if the Fed stays with that and gets enough confidence back in the market in order to bring rates down.
We could also require greater down payments and keep the interest rates at a decent cost too, and that might accomplish the same thing, but that's something they aren't going to listen to. So.
Yes. The only question I have is what is the difference between 20% and 15% when you're talking about the cost of money? 5 points. But in real terms, in terms of economic flurry, I really have to question whether that's even a thawing. I really have to question assumptions that say that we're going to see a recovery or a thaw in this state on 15% money. If people are willing to, if the factory owner is willing to do the work in the factory all by themselves, maybe. I just don't see how you can do it. But you're convinced that kind of money will allow for some recovery, at least in 82.
Theoretically, there is at the margin, there's always somebody who will do something at 18%, and they wouldn't do it at 19%, and there's someone else who will do something at 18%, and they wouldn't do it at 19%. And someone will do something at 17%, and they wouldn't do it at 18%.
And people change. I can remember turning down a mortgage on a home I was going to buy, and it was all 8%.
Yeah.
It's a funny thing, you know, in other investment funds, at some consequence, eventual insurance being one of them, people that I work with have indicated that they don't see any really basic change in economic, I mean, real serious economic, until those interest rates go below about 11%. Exactly what Senator Powell's trying to drag out. Sure, you're going to have someone that says the point makes a difference, and you may do something. Talk about real increased productivity. To show that, they don't see that trend happening. They don't see it happening for a long period of time. There is not a quick fix. That's
well,
what they're predicting.
That was the point I made on housing starts when you were here in March.
Yes.
Was, aren't we exhausting? Say, sure, people are still building homes. Okay, we've got the veterans program, and we've got a few people who can qualify otherwise. But isn't that a finite pool? And aren't we eliminating the people who are reaching into that market in the passage of time? And then there's all the rest of us, which are really necessary to have a real economic recovery. It's not the millionaires alone that make it. It's us who purchase what their capital produces. That's what really makes it go. If the warehouse goes up and we can't buy it, it ain't going to go. And that's why I still question at 15% money, whether or not the indicators are going to be such that they will go ahead and produce and provide jobs, and we will purchase their produce. Okay, thank you very much. You've had an exhausting day, I'm sure.
Yeah. Where's our next meeting and when?
How do you find that word, fun?
H-O-O-N, I think.
We might have some...
Sorry, how do I spell it?
We might ask you a few questions here in a few weeks. And if your econometric model shows something greatly different, I hope that we could expect, and if you believe it...
I'd like to hear the econometric, whether they
Mr. Chairman.
And I think years from now, you'd still say that the only thing certain is that's wrong.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, all right.
Never change.
I think there's a good argument for doing away with all this nonsense.
I think the Siemens I would have been just as good in January, and I think we would come closer to what we see that we went through in this last 19-week period, but I'm not going to get into that since we're just 19 weeks worse off.
Since we're all here on a fairly friendly basis, let me put it plug, if I may, for House Bill 2312, which is in your committee, which would be of considerable
what does that
help
do?
To us in the access to corporate data. Which would be a considerable help.
What is it, a stoop bill or what?
Yeah.
Those bills haven't fared well over here, but we'll give it due consideration.
Sure is glad to see you, fellas.
Okay, we will move to House Bill 2212. That's only 100 points off from the bill just mentioned. Salvi's eye, Senator Halleck. It's now 2:30, the time I promised to hear you.
Pleasure to have you here, Senator.
My pleasure to spend the last 50 minutes hearing Mr. Egger again. In 1977, I introduced Senate Bill 530, which would have removed the property tax exemption for Port of Portland-owned property, such as exists across the channel from Sauvie Island, and would have provided much of the solution for Sauvie Island tax base needs. It's a small school district with a lot of huge amount of tax-exempt property. 530 died in the House committee, but it did pass the Senate. In 1979, Senate Bill 350 passed both chambers, requiring tax-exempt port property to make payments in lieu to school districts in their vicinity to provide support for those districts. Okay, the bill chiefly affected Wasco, Gillum, and Multnomah counties. And in Wasco and Gillum, the county assessors agreed that the bill had the impact that the legislature had intended it had, putting considerable monies, they did, into the pocket of local school districts. Not in Multnomah County. Multnomah County, however, the tax assessor looked at it differently. He restricted the in-lieu payment on dock storage facilities to apply to only grain elevators and storage bins, not the equipment used in loading those bins, and so determined for this biennium just ending an in-lieu payment of only about $8,600 instead of $50,000, which was the hoped-for gain from the bill for Sauvie Island on the dock properties. So this session, here is House Bill 2212, which has passed the House 53-2, in which we seek to make the in-lieu tax assessment tax payment, the in-lieu tax payment, apply to all of a port's waterfront property except the dock area. Dock area is defined to include only those areas immediately adjacent to where the ships are themselves unloaded. Now, Jim Scherzinger of your staff is the expert on this. According to him, dock area includes grain elevators, but not other areas away from the dock. The bill also applies retroactively to 1979. The retroactive provisions of the bill should increase Sauvie Island School District's 1980 to 81 revenues by $58,000 and those of the Portland Public School District by $55,000. 1982 in-lieu payments to Sauvie will be increased by $22,000 and those to the Portland Public School District about $26,000. After that, the payments will not increase because they will be used to offset the tax levies of the two districts. And that's the essence, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. So only the retroactive portion gives them additional revenue.
It does.
As an offset.
Yes.
Okay. Now, I thought I saw, what's your name, Barney? Don Barney. Was he here today?
Mm-hmm. Yes, he was.
Understanding, Mr. Chairman, is that an accommodation has been reached with all the players
parties
involved.
Okay.
After 18 months of negotiating.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator McFarland.
Then we're not going to hear any opposition to this bill, do you think?
I do not know of any, Senator.
No one signed up against it.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Roger Martin. Oh, excuse me. Kathleen Hyde. Or Heap. Probably Hyde, right?
Heap. Yeah, I got it right.
It's probably Heap.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Kathleen Heap. I'm the superintendent at Sauvie Island School District, and I'm here on behalf of the taxpayers who asked me to come down and talk also as Mr. Senator Halleck did. The first bill that was passed in 79 was for $50,000. The House bill that's now before you will generate $22,000, which is still considerably less. However, since the bill is going to be equally applied throughout the state, the district is in agreement that we'd like to have this bill passed.
Other questions? Yeah. Senator Monroe.
You're in the process of trying to build a new school in Sauvie Island to replace the one that burned down that was not covered by insurance?
No, it was covered.
Oh, it was covered. Is that project underway? Will this money be enable you to fulfill that project? Or
no, it's capital improvement. I mean, this is general fund money. The capital, we have let the construction bid, and we'll probably start within a month. But that's entirely separate financing.
Okay. The money that you'll get, because this is retroactive from 1979, won't help at all.
That'll be general fund money. It'll reduce the taxes, though, to the
right.
People of the island.
So indirectly, since they're being taxed also to pay for the bonds, I suppose, for the new school, we'll give them a little back in this pocket for that, which is coming out of this pocket.
Yes.
Eventually, it'll just lower their rate.
What's the school tax rate in Sauvies Island?
Next year, it'll be about just a little under $17 per thousand.
That's pretty high.
Well, that's with the $1.19 for the bond.
Okay. Is that just elementary?
No, it's through 12.
Oh. That's not bad.
That's not really too bad.
No, for doing all of that, because I've seen elementary ones as high as 8 and 9 alone.
No, it's comparable with most of Multnomah County.
You ready for this?
Yeah. We're in here. One more witness. Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay. Roger Martin.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not here on this bill. I mistakenly signed up. I should have testified on 7-0-5-12.
Oh, okay.
Is it ready? Get this on out. Yes. Unlike some other